Records of the Life of the Venerable Master Xuan Hua. Part 1. Early Years. The Venerable Master Xuan Hua, who was also called Anzi and Dulin, was born in Manchuria, near the city of Harbin, on the Sungari River. The master's father was a farmer named Bai Fu Hai. His mother, maiden name Hu, was a devoted Buddhist who ate only pure vegetarian food and recited the Buddha's name all throughout her life. She gave birth to 8 children, 5 sons, and 3 daughters, of whom the master is the youngest. One night in a dream, she saw Amitabha Buddha emitting brilliant light, which shone throughout the world and shook heaven and earth. Startled, she awoke to find the room filled with a rare fragrance, and at that moment, the master was born. He cried continuously for 3 days out of deep sympathy for beings who suffer in the Saha world. Seeing Death. The master was raised in a remote country village. One day when he was 11 years old, he saw an infant wrapped in straw lying in the brush. Its eyes and mouth were shut, and when he called to it, it did not respond. The master had never seen death, and questioned his companions who answered, "It's dead." Still, he did not understand the meaning of death. When he returned home, he asked his mother, who said, "Everyone must die. Some die of old age, some of disease, and some in accidents. Farmers, workers, merchants, and officials, the rich as well as the poor, all must eventually die. But there must be a way to escape death," said the master. "There is," replied a visitor. "You must cultivate the way. That is the only method. Understand your own mind and become enlightened to your basic nature. In this way, you may end birth and death and stop the revolving wheel of rebirth." Although he was very young, the master understood the profound principle. The visitor's words affected him deeply. Afterwards, he resolved to leave the home life to be a bhikshu. When he asked his mother for permission, she said, "Your wish to leave the home life is truly rare and good. And if you have good roots, a firm will, and a great Bodhi heart, you may realize the supreme Buddha way. I approve of your wish, which verifies my former dream. But I am old and will not live long. You should stay and serve your father and me. When we die, you may leave the home life to cultivate." The master respected his mother's wishes and followed her to worship the Buddha. He took excellent care of his parents, fanning them in the summer and warming their cold beds in the winter. He served them as if they were living Buddhas and became widely known as Filial Son Bai. Guided Across. On the 19th day of the second lunar month, the anniversary of the birth of Guanyin Bodhisattva, when the master was 12 years old, he dreamed he was wandering in a vast expanse of wilderness. Suddenly he came upon a road which was gutted with holes like those of a sieve. They were deep, dark, and extremely dangerous. The master knew that if he slipped and fell, he would never get out again. He stood bewildered, unable to move forward or back. He had lost sight of his father and mother and could not find his way home. Remembering that he had not yet fulfilled his vow to leave the home life, he grew frightened and began to cry, calling out for the Buddha's protection. Just then an old woman appeared, wearing a patchwork robe and a string of beads. On her feet were straw sandals, and in her hand a bamboo pole. Her eyes shone with a spiritual radiance, and her face beamed with compassion. "Child," she asked, "why are you so upset?" The boy brushed his tears aside and said, "I'm lost on a dangerous road and I can't find my way home." "Don't worry," she said, "just follow me and I'll take you there." She led him down the road. In an instant, they were walking on a safe, smooth highway. He could see clearly into the distance and was free to ramble in the Dharma realm. Seeing his home ahead, he felt a joy for which there is no name. Glancing back on the dangerous road, he saw many people following him, old and young, men and women, monks and scholars. "Who are those people?" he asked. "Where did they come from, and where are they going?" "They have an affinity with you," she said, "and they also want to go home. You must guide them well and show them the way so that they may all arrive at Nirvana. I have important work to do elsewhere, and so I shall leave you now, but soon we shall meet again." The master asked her name and where she lived. "You will find out when you arrive home," she said. "There's no need to ask so many questions." Suddenly, she whirled around and disappeared. The master led the people safely home and woke from his dream, feeling extremely happy. Filial piety. Filiality is the foremost of the 10,000 virtues and the foundation of all cultivation. When the master was very young, his ambition was to become emperor. He ordered all the village children to pile up a mound of dirt in an empty field, and he sat on top of it and issued commands. 20, 30, sometimes even 50 little children would silently obey. He told them to bow to him, and they put their heads on the ground. But after the master saw the dead child, his conduct changed. He no longer wanted people to bow to him. He wished to bow to them instead. At the age of 12, he decided to bow to his parents every day. But then he thought, "If I suddenly start bowing, they might not like it and order me to stop. Everyone bows to his parents and elders at New Year's, but no one bows every day. There's no precedent for it. What shall I do?" He then thought of a plan. The first time he bowed, his father was shocked. "What are you doing?" he demanded. "I have been unfilial in the past," said the master, "but now I want to cultivate the way and put an end to birth and death. In order to cultivate, it is absolutely necessary to respect one's parents." "You don't have to bow," said his father. "It will be enough just to listen to us and do what you are told." Then the master fabricated a vision in order to persuade his parents to allow him to practice filial piety. "Father," he said, "last night I had a dream. I don't know whether it was a Buddha or a Bodhisattva, but someone said to me, your offense karma is extremely heavy, and you will soon die unless you bow to your parents every day. Now, Father, I don't exactly believe the dream, but on the other hand, I certainly don't want to die. And so I am going to bow to you. Hearing that, his parents had no further objection. Although they didn't like it at first, gradually they were pleased to see their son changing his habits and growing in wisdom and virtue. Fearing no difficulty. The master bowed to his father and mother 3 times each, in the morning and the evening, 12 bows every day. Then he thought, the world is bigger than just my father and mother. And he began to bow to the heavens, to the earth, to the emperor, and to his teachers as well. He also bowed to his master, even though he had not yet met him. The master knew that without the aid of a good knowing advisor, it is impossible to cultivate, and he felt that he would meet his master soon. He also bowed to the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, Pratyeka Buddhas, and Arhats, and to all the good people in the world to thank them for all the good deeds they had done. He bowed on behalf of the people they had helped. Evil people are to be pitied, he thought. And he bowed on their behalf, asking that their karmic offenses might be lessened and that they might learn to repent and reform. When doing this, he thought of himself as the very worst offender. Each day, he thought of new people to bow for, and soon he was bowing 837 times in the morning and 837 times in the evening, which took about 3 hours a day in all. The master didn't let others see him bow. He rose at 4 in the morning, washed his face, went outside, lit a stick of incense, and bowed regardless of the weather. If there was snow on the ground, he would just bow in the snow. In the evening, long after everyone was asleep, he went outside and bowed again. He practiced this way for many years until later, while practicing filial piety beside his mother's grave, he lessened his bows to 9 a day in order to save time. Most people would not understand why he undertook such a difficult practice. But the master has vowed to take upon himself the sufferings of all beings and fears no hardship. He has said that he would visit the hells in order to save living beings. When he was reciting the Earth Store Bodhisattva Sutra, every day he knelt, without cushions, in the brick courtyard. He knelt and recited until his knees broke open and bled, and yet it never occurred to him to stop kneeling or to bandage his knees. They healed quickly on their own. The more you fear suffering, the master has said, the more suffering you will have. Good fortune is like a bank account. Accumulated good deeds make a store of blessings. But if you just spend your blessing by enjoying them, soon you will have none. To undergo suffering is to end suffering. For suffering which is endured with courage will never have to be endured again. In my life, I have suffered greatly, and so I wish to undergo more suffering. This is a subtle, wonderful principle. We should investigate it in detail. Part 2. Early Cultivation. Taking Refuge with the Triple Jewel. The master continually thought, Birth and death is a serious problem. Death comes quickly, and the wheel of rebirth turns upon a dangerous road. Having lost a human body, in tens of thousands of eons, it is hard to be reborn again as a human being. When he was 12, the master understood what few are able to understand in an entire lifetime, and then only when they are old. The cycle of becoming, dwelling, decay and emptiness, and the impermanence of the body of flesh. He decided to take refuge in the Buddha Dharma, and having gained his parents' permission, set out on a pilgrimage. Visiting and talking with countless Dharma masters, he hoped to find a true, good-knowing advisor. 3 years passed and he met the High Master Chang-ju. The moment he saw him, he felt an affinity, as if they had been together in previous lives. "Great virtuous one," the master asked, "I beg you to teach me how to end birth and death." The High Master Chang-ju replied, "Work hard. You must walk every step of the way with a firm tread. Practice with diligence. That is the highest vehicle." The master was overjoyed at the instruction and bowed to Master Chang-ju as his teacher. He took refuge with the Triple Jewel, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. He investigated the principles of dhyana meditation and sought to become enlightened to the mind ground. Great Master Chang-ju was one of inconceivable high virtue and spiritual attainment. Although he had never learned to read or write, his followers often heard him compose orally, speaking in fluent classical prose and verse. He was able to do so because his self-nature was open and pure, and his mind was enlightened. No matter how far apart Master Chang-ju and the master were, Master Chang-ju always knew what his disciple was doing, and the disciple knew the same of his master. Schooling. The master entered private school at the late age of 15 and was at first slow to learn. After grasping the principles in the Great Learning, however, he surpassed his schoolmates and could recite a work from memory after reading it only once. In less than 2.5 years, he thoroughly mastered the 4 books and the 5 classics, and studied the works on medicine, divination, astrology, and physiognomy extensively. What he prized most, however, were the Buddhist sutras. Sudden and gradual. At the age of 16, a year after he began school, the master was lecturing on the Buddhist sutras. At that time, he read the 6 Patriarchs Dharma Jewel Platform Sutra, and the more he read it, the happier he became. The monks at the temple were illiterate and had no place to go to study, and so the master, then a layman, stayed at the temple and taught them the 6 Patriarch Sutra, the Diamond Sutra, and the Amitabha Sutra. In the 6th Patriarch Sutra, we read of the 6 Patriarch's disciples who said, "We are the authentic dhyana school, the southern school of sudden enlightenment. Our master, the great master Huineng, is the rightful heir to the Dharma." In the north, Shenxiu's disciples promoted his gradual teaching, saying, "All the heart dharma of the 5th Patriarch, Master Hongren, has been transmitted to our teacher, Shenxiu." In this way, the 2 schools argue back and forth. When the master read that, he thought, How can there be a sudden and gradual? Are they two? Are they different? And he wrote a couplet which says, Although sudden and gradual differ, once complete, they are one. Why divide north and south? Holy and common differ temporarily, but their basic nature is the same. Don't argue east and west. Sudden means suddenly become a Buddha, and gradual means doing it slowly. Once one has attained Buddhahood, however, there is neither sudden nor gradual. Why discriminate between the northern school of Shenxiu and the southern school of the sixth patriarch? It is because one has cultivated diligently and practiced the Buddha Dharma in the past that one has become suddenly enlightened and reaped the fruit of Buddhahood. Holy refers to the Buddha, and common refers to living beings. The two ideas seem different, but the basic nature of all living beings is the same. The Buddha is a living being who has realized Buddhahood, and living beings are Buddhas who have not yet realized Buddhahood. Shakyamuni Buddha became enlightened under the Bodhi tree and said, Strange, strange, strange indeed, all living beings have the Buddha nature. All can become Buddhas. It is simply because of false thinking and attachment that they do not give proof to it. So the master has said, Don't say that Amitabha Buddha is in the Western land and that living beings in the East are simply living beings. Don't discriminate like that. The basic nature is the same, and if you truly understand the Buddha Dharma, there isn't anything at all. If you debate and argue, you have an attachment. And with attachments, you cannot understand the Buddha Dharma. And don't try to promote your teacher by saying things like, My teacher has come from China with the orthodox treasury, the true and proper Buddha Dharma. Tell them instead that what your teacher says is empty and false. There is no Dharma which can be spoken, and there is fundamentally no right or wrong, no true or false. Don't speak of the rights and wrongs of other people. Don't be like the disciples of the sixth patriarch and of Shenxiu. The power of goodness. The master built a free school and served as teacher. At that time, an epidemic of sheep's hair ulcers spread throughout the village, and 8 or 9 of the master's students became infected with that painful illness. Luckily, the master knew how to take care of them, and they were soon completely healed. But then the teacher himself got sick, and no one could cure him. Since my birth, he said, I have dedicated my life to doing the work of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and if they no longer find me of use, I shall gladly die. If they still need me, I shall be cured without medical treatment. That night, the master woke up with a severe choking sensation in his throat. He coughed hard and spit up several lumps of wool, and his illness was cured. From that we know that the master truly bears the responsibility for the Tathagata's Dharma. One day, a member of the local Way Virtue Society suddenly went insane. She had been possessed by a fox spirit, and her countenance and voice changed. I am a great yellow immortal. She raged, because you don't pay reverence to me, I have come to punish you. The vice president, the director, and the head lecturer all tried to reason with her, but they couldn't control her. The master finally stepped forward and declared, "The way virtue society is established according to the decree of heaven, and in disturbing it, you are contradicting heaven's will. For this reason, I must now act on heaven's behalf to reprimand you. You cannot escape." The fox spirit tried to move but could not. Terrified, the woman knelt before the master, begging for compassion.
"Let me go!"
The fox spirit spoke through her. "And I will never disturb the society again." "Since you admit your error," said the master, "you may go. If you try it again, there will be no reprieve." The fox spirit bowed and left. It is true that heaven's law is absolutely just and can only be upheld by the virtuous. The master's filial conduct was respected by all, and he was elected to succeed Sun Xiang Mao as president of the Benevolent Society. Mr. Xiao, the master's friend, had been the vice president, but he turned his back on the truth and broke the precept against drinking liquor. Although everyone urged him to resume his position, he refused. When the master heard of this, he said, "I will try to persuade him to return, but if I fail, I will kill myself and never again enter this defiled world." Mr. Xiao, moved by the master's willingness to sacrifice his very life for a friend, repented of his error and resumed his position as before. As the head of the Way Virtue Society, the master not only urged others to practice the way, but did so himself. His great virtue and selflessness were admired by the entire community. He labored to build free schools and meeting halls where he lectured against alcohol, tobacco, and drugs. He worked untiringly for the benefit of others and never thought of himself. One day, beneath a tree, he read of the virtuous conduct of Zhang Ya Xuan and was so impressed that he made a vow. "Heaven," he said, "I shall certainly follow the example of Zhang Ya Xuan." That very evening, a demon came to test the master's vow. A beautiful woman secretly entered the master's room and tempted him with her beauty and with money. Caught off guard for an instant, the master's mind wavered, but he immediately regained his composure and thought, "She has been sent to test my sincerity." He recited the Buddha's name, collected his thoughts, and then spoke to the girl. "As a member of the Way Virtue Society," he said, "you should understand the principle of cause and effect. Now, would you like to be born in the heaven, or would you rather go to the hell?" "I want to go to heaven, of course," she said. "Then you must not act in this way," said the master, "because if you continue, you will certainly go to hell." Hearing this, she was greatly ashamed, begged forgiveness, and left. The master had joined the Way Virtue Association when he was 16, and by the time he was 17, he was teaching 60 to 70 men and women, many of whom were middle-aged. In teaching, the master always tried to simplify problems so they could be easily understood. One such problem was potato skins. Whenever a lunch was held at the Way Virtue Association, the members would not eat their potato skins. The master had explained about the benefits of eating what others cannot eat, and of doing what others cannot do, and of how essential it is to actually put that teaching into practice. But his instructions had gone in one ear and out the other, and his students paid no attention to it at all. One time when the students were eating potatoes and, as usual, spitting the skins out on the floor until the place was littered with them, the master took a bowl and went around picking up all the skins. Then he ate them. His students were extremely embarrassed to see their teacher eat what they themselves had chewed up and spit out. The master's lesson on eating what others cannot eat finally had sunk in. His students repented and changed their ways. When he was 17, the master met an old cultivator who could sit in meditation for 1 or 2 days straight, but who was attached to his sitting. One day, the cultivator accidentally stepped on a small white mouse and killed it, and soon he went insane and could no longer enter samadhi. He asked the master why and was told it was because he had stepped on the mouse. "What shall I do?" the cultivator asked. "Let him go," said the master. "But I don't know how," the cultivator said. The master did a little work and released the mouse. The cultivator regained his skill and once more entered samadhi. In cultivating the way, one must be very careful. The demon of sickness. While a young student of the Buddha Dharma, 17 or 18 years old, the master once had an arrogant thought. "Everyone is afraid of demons," he said, "but I'm not. Demons are afraid of me. Heaven demons, earth demons, God, ghost, and human demons. I'm not afraid of any demons at all." Soon after he said this, a demon of sickness came and frightened the master. He was so sick that he lay in his bed from morning to night, unable to eat or drink. "I spoke foolishly," he thought, "and now a demon of sickness has found me, and there is nothing I can do." The master was so sick he went into a coma and was on the verge of death. Suddenly he saw the three filial sons of the Wang family of Manchuria. Two of them, a Buddhist monk and a Taoist master, had left the home life, and the third was a layman. They came and took the master out to play. As soon as they went out the door, their feet left the ground, and they rode the clouds and drove the wind. They took off from the roof of the house, and when the master looked down, the house was already very small. They met a lot of people and traveled everywhere to temples. On Mount Wutai, Mount Omei, Mount Putor, and others, they also visited foreign lands and saw people who had blonde hair and blue eyes. It was like a movie, scene after scene, quickly passed. Frame after frame, they actually went to those places and heard those things. When they returned, the master opened the front door and saw himself lying on the bed inside the house. "How can this be?" he thought. And as soon as he was aware that there were two of him, the two changed into one, and he opened his eyes and looked up at his mother and father. "He's alive!" they cried joyfully. "He's not going to die after all." The master had been unconscious for 6 or 7 days. He hadn't eaten, drunk water, spoken, or even opened his eyes in all that time. Having awakened, he now knew that he had died, and yet not died. In fact, he was a living dead person, one who had been born again. After that, he never spoke recklessly, because he knew that if one brags that one doesn't fear anything, something will happen to make one afraid. Everything's a test. After taking refuge with the Venerable Master Changjir, the Master cultivated Dhyana Samadhi. His skill increased day by day until he was no longer moved by external influences, whether sights or sounds. When he was 18 years old, on the 29th day of the 12th lunar month, he had the following dream. He dreamt he entered a three-room hut. In the southern section was a beautiful young mother with her child. She was well-dressed and extremely attractive. In the eastern section, on two leather trunks, stood an oil lamp. The young woman moved toward the lamp and whispered, "It's late now. You cannot go back home." She glanced at him seductively and put out the light, approached the master, and embraced him.
"What are you doing? What are you doing?" shouted the master.
There was no answer, and the master thought, "She must be a demon. How else could she be so shameless?" Then he recited loudly, "Homage to the greatly compassionate Bodhisattva Guan Yin, please save me." With the Bodhisattva's aid, the master awoke from his dream, but the portion of his body embraced by the demon ached for about a week. The master has instructed his disciples, "Everything's a test to see what you will do. If you don't recognize what's before your eyes, you'll have to start anew." Part 3. Bitter Practices Beside the Grave. When the master was 19 years old, his mother fell ill and couldn't move. He looked after her himself, changing her bedding and washing her clothes, feeding and caring for her with filial devotion. Near the city of Harbin, in Beiyin He, there was a powerful creature called the Fox Immortal. The Fox Immortal can transform into many kinds of beings. For example, during the Japanese invasion of Manchuria, this particular Fox Immortal fought the Japanese. The Japanese army had secretly built an electrically run oil cauldron near their base, and they shipped people in by the trainloads to be boiled in it. It was an extremely efficient operation and left no traces whatsoever. The Fox Immortal transformed himself into an old man and walked into the area. The Japanese fired their guns, but he walked right on by and blew up the armory. Many Japanese soldiers were killed, and the rest of them moved out, saying the place was hexed. It was also well known that the Fox Immortal could cure illness. All one had to do was to go to his place, set out a bowl with a red cloth over it, and make a request. The master went to the Fox Immortal seeking help for his mother. He set out the bowl, knelt down, asked for help, and waited. He knelt for 3 days and 3 nights without moving, without getting up, and without eating or drinking water. But nothing happened. At the end of the 3rd day, he returned home, and not long after that, in the 3rd lunar month, the master's mother died. The warm spring winds had melted the winter snow, and the roads were muddy and hard to travel. As the family burial ground was more than 10 miles away, the family and friends were worried about how they would be able to conduct the service and transport the coffin. The night before the funeral, the master put in the following request. "It would be best if the weather were cold and dry, with a fine covering of snow on the ground for traction." The temperature dropped, and toward morning an inch of snow fell on the frozen ground. About 40 people attended the funeral. After the service, the sky cleared and the snow began to melt. As they started to leave, the master sat down beside the grave. His brothers called to him, but he didn't answer. "The old monk has gone into samadhi," they said, and left without him. When the people left, trouble came. The master sat for one day, and the next evening, a large pack of wolf dogs closed in. They were extremely fierce and were known to eat people. The master thought to himself, "I'm not going to pay any attention to the dogs. Even tigers couldn't move me. I am cultivating filial conduct for my mother, and if the dogs eat me, it would be a most honorable, awesome sacrifice." The dogs slunk low to the ground, snarling and growling. From a distance of 30 feet, they inched their way in until they were less than 10 feet from where he sat. Then suddenly, the whole pack turned and ran. Had the master started to run, the dogs would have ripped him apart, but because he didn't move, they thought, "He's not going to bother us, so we won't bother him." The dogs chased off visitors to the grounds, but they never bothered anyone who came to see the master. Sometime later, after the master had left home, he was visiting a relative who believed in the fox immortal and who had invited him to his home to receive offerings. When the fox immortal arrived and saw the master, he immediately knelt and begged the master to be his teacher. "Who are you?" the master asked. "I'm the fox immortal of Bei Yin He," came the reply. "Really?" said the master. "I knelt for 3 days seeking medicine from you, and you didn't give it to me, and now you want me to be your teacher? Absolutely not." "That's not true," said the fox immortal. "It wasn't that I didn't want to give it to you. I wanted to create an affinity with you by giving you the medicine, but every time I approached you with it, I couldn't open my eyes. I wanted to take refuge with you even then, but I couldn't get near you." Hearing the fox immortal speak that way, you may wonder just why it was that he couldn't open his eyes when he approached the master with the medicine. But if you don't know, there is no way to explain it to you. When drawing a picture of a person, one draws the outer form, not the innards. In order to understand what the fox immortal saw, it is necessary to work hard, cultivate the way, and figure it out for yourself. Soon after his mother's burial, the master went to Three Conditions Temple at Pingfang Station, south of Harbin, and on the 8th day of the 4th lunar month, he left the home life receiving the 10 precepts of a Shramanera, or novice monk, from the great master Chongzhi. He then returned to his mother's grave and built a 5x8 hut out of 5-inch sorghum stalks. The hut kept out the wind and rain, but there was actually little difference between the inside and the outside. Here, the master observed the custom of filial piety by watching over his mother's grave for a period of 3 years. Clothed only in a rag robe, he endured the bitter Manchurian snow and the blazing summer sun. He ate one meal a day and never lay down to sleep. At the site of the grave, the master read many sutras. He first read the Lotus Sutra and jumped for joy. "I recited it," he said, "kneeling for 7 days and nights, forgetting to sleep or eat, until blood dripped from both of my eyes. Next, I read the Sharangama Sutra, deeply investigating the great samadhi. Then I read the Avatamsaka Sutra, and my awakening was ocean-like." boundless, vast, nameless, and majestically supreme. The Master has said, cultivation is simply enduring what you cannot endure, bearing what you cannot bear. You must resolve, what others cannot do, I do. What others cannot suffer, I suffer. What others cannot eat, I eat. Until the point where there is not even a thought of stealing so much as a mouthful of food or a drop of water. You say you cannot take it? Take what you cannot take. That is cultivation, and it's the only thing that counts. A 23-day dream. Since the time the Master resolved to cultivate the way, he has eaten only one meal a day, and that before noon. This is because he knows that many of the world's people are hungry, and he wishes to offer his food to them. While sitting beside his mother's grave, he did not cook for himself, and since no one brought him food, he simply didn't eat. Finally, a layman vowed to bring him food every day. When the summer rains came and the ground was muddy, the Master told him, "I have enough food for 20 days or so. Please don't trouble yourself to climb the steep hillside when the weather is bad." Because he believed every word the Master said, from then on he stayed home when it rained. Of course, the Master had not so much as a grain of rice stored in his hut. Once it rained for many days, but the Master just shut his eyes to meditate and paid no attention to whether it was night or day. When the man arrived, the Master asked, "How long has it been since your last visit?" 23 days, he said. "Ah," the Master said, "I have dreamed a 23-day dream." 18 solemn vows. While sitting beside his mother's grave on the 19th day of the 6th lunar month, the Master made the following solemn vows. "I bow before the Buddhas of the 10 directions, the Dharma of the Tripitaka, and the Holy Sangha of the past and present, praying that they will hear and bear witness. I, disciple Dulin, Ansi, resolve not to seek for myself either the blessings of the gods or of men, or the attainments of the Sravakas, Pratika Buddhas, or high bodhisattvas. Instead, I rely on the most supreme vehicle, the one Buddha vehicle, and bring forth the heart of Bodhi, vowing that all living beings of the Dharma realm shall attain the utmost right and perfect enlightenment at the same time as I. 1. I vow that I will not attain the right enlightenment if there is even one bodhisattva in the 10 directions and the 3 periods of time to the end of empty space and the Dharma realm who has not yet become a Buddha. 2. I vow that I will not attain the right enlightenment if there is even one Pratika Buddhas in the 10 directions and the 3 periods of time to the end of empty space and the Dharma realm, who has not yet become a Buddha. 3. I vow that I will not attain the right enlightenment if there is even one Sravaka in the 10 directions and the 3 periods of time to the end of empty space and the Dharma realm, who has not yet become a Buddha. 4. I vow that as long as there is a single God in the triple realm who has not accomplished Buddhahood, I too will not attain the right enlightenment. 5. I vow that I will not attain the right enlightenment if there is even one human being in the worlds of the 10 directions who has not yet become a Buddha. 6. I vow that I will not attain the right enlightenment if there is even one Asura who has not yet become a Buddha. 7. I vow that I will not attain the right enlightenment if there is even one animal who has not yet become a Buddha. 8. I vow that I will not attain the right enlightenment if there is even one hungry ghost who has not yet become a Buddha. 9. I vow that I will not attain the right enlightenment if there is even one being in the hells who has not yet become a Buddha. 10. I vow that I will not attain the right enlightenment if there is any being in the triple realm who has taken refuge with me and has not yet become a Buddha, be it a god, immortal, human being, or Asura, a bird, fish, plant, or animal, a magical dragon, beast, ghost, or spirit. 11. I vow to bestow upon all living beings of the Dharma realm all the blessings and happiness I am destined to receive. 12. I vow to take upon myself the miseries of all living beings of the Dharma realm, that I alone may endure them on their behalf. 13. I vow that my spirit shall enter the hearts of all living beings who do not believe in the Buddha Dharma, causing them to reform their evil conduct and practice the good, and cause them to take refuge with the Triple Jewel and ultimately realize Buddhahood. 14. I vow that every living being who has seen my face or even heard my name will bring forth the Bodhi heart and quickly realize the Buddha way. 15. I vow to observe reverently the Buddha's regulation and take only one meal a day, and that at noon. 16. I vow to enlighten all living beings according to their dispositions. 17. I vow in this very life to attain the 5 eyes and the 6 spiritual penetrations, and the ability to fly freely. 18. I vow that my vows will all be fulfilled. I vow to save the numberless living beings. I vow to cut off the inexhaustible afflictions. I vow to study the limitless Dharma doors. I vow to realize the Supreme Buddha Way. Part 4. Miracles Beside the Grave. The 12th of the Master's Vows reads, I vow to take upon myself the miseries of all living beings of the Dharma realm, that I alone may endure their suffering. In fulfilling the vow, whenever someone sought the Master's help, he would first determine his sincerity and then exhaust his strength to help him. Since the body is merely a temporary combination of the four illusory elements, earth, air, fire, and water, if one can let go of attachment to the body, any sickness will disappear of itself. Letting go of attachment means simply to set aside physical comfort and seek instead to understand and practice the Buddha Dharma for the benefit of all beings. In this way, one may learn to leave the sea of suffering and attain nirvana's permanence, purity, true self, and bliss. The incidents which follow are examples of how the master's Dharma power combined with the seeker's true sincerity can cure an illness. Unusual events beside the grave. In the summertime, the mosquitoes were big and fierce, and although they never bit the master, his visitors often complained. "Why don't they bite you?" they asked him. "I don't know," said the master. "I've never really thought about it." Then he thought, "Mosquitoes have no respect for anyone. They will bite bodhisattvas. They will bite arhats. They will bite anybody because they are really stupid. Still, they don't bite me. Now, if the wolf dogs won't bite me or my guests, the mosquitoes should leave my guests alone as well." From then on, among the master's visitors, there was not one who ever got bitten by a mosquito while visiting him. Once, there was a severe earthquake. The master, sitting in meditation, simply thought, "The demon king has come to disturb my samadhi, but I am not going to move." When the quake stopped, he thought, "I have subdued the demon." Another time, miraculously, the sixth patriarch, Great Master Huineng, came to chat with the master. He told him that later the master would go to America, described the people he would meet, and said that the master would transmit the orthodox Dharma to the Western world. After they had talked, the master escorted the sixth patriarch out of the hut. The sixth patriarch took four or five steps and disappeared. It was only then that the master remembered that the sixth patriarch had entered nirvana over 1,200 years before. Relieving the suffering of living beings. When the master was cultivating the way beside his mother's grave, there lived in the village a woman named Zhang. She had suffered from chronic vomiting for 4 years. Both Chinese and Western doctors were unable to cure her, and their medicines had no effect. Hearing of the master's filial virtue, she went to the gravesite, knelt respectfully, and sought help. The master first explained to her the principles of human life in the light of the Buddha Dharma and the origins of diseases as a product of cause and effect. When she had repented of her past misdeeds, he taught her to recite the name of Amitabha Buddha, which she did faithfully. She visited the master daily and bowed to him with extreme sincerity. Within 21 days, her illness was completely cured. Another Mrs. Zhang, who lived near Pingfang Station, had been paralyzed in the legs for 3 years. Neither medical treatment nor sorcery had any effect. When she heard of the filial son Bai, she went by carriage to his hut and asked to be cured. "I know nothing about medicine," said the master. "And yet those who believe are healed by virtue of their sincerity. You need only have faith, repent of your offenses, and change for the good. If you recite the Buddha's name and stop eating meat, you will soon be well. Mrs. Zhang bowed to the master and asked for a picture of him, which she hung in her home. Kneeling on the floor, she bowed before it daily. After 100 days, the paralysis disappeared and she could move normally again. Seeing this, the entire household bowed to the master as their teacher. They vowed to make offerings and support the Triple Jewel and to work energetically for the good of mankind. In Ba Jia village, 40 miles from the master's dwelling, Dai Guoxian was dying of tuberculosis. The doctors had given up hope for him, yet he still wanted to live. He went to the master and pleaded for his life. Seeing that he was sincere, the master instructed him to recite the name of the greatly compassionate Guanshiyin Bodhisattva and to observe the precept against killing by not eating meat. Then the master poured water gently over his head, and the sick man suddenly felt comfortable and strong. His sickness was healed. He then took refuge with the Triple Jewel and continued to recite the Great Compassion Mantra and Guanyin's name without cease. Mrs. Tong had been in labor for 4 days and was near death. Her mother-in-law went to the master and knelt before him, crying bitterly. The master pitied her and said, "Return home. Call the whole family together and recite Namo Guanshiyin Bodhisattva. Then make a vow to eat vegetarian food 100 days out of every year, and everything will be all right." She returned home and followed the master's instructions. Mrs. Tong gave birth right away, and both she and her child were safe and sound. The master's following continued to grow in number. In the village of Dongjingzi, Wang Fengyi and his family of over 30 members all took refuge. They were all vegetarians and worked with great dedication to spread the Buddha Dharma. When Huang's nephew became seriously ill, he and the boy's father knelt before the image of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and begged the master for help. They prayed for a full week, and then one night, Wang dreamt that the master came to his house and gave the child a pill, which the child immediately ate. When Wang awoke, he found the child had been completely cured. Hearing this, the friends and relatives all took refuge and cultivated together to leave the sea of suffering for the land of ultimate bliss. Three ins, three outs. In the master's village lived a student named Tang. At age 14, he was stupid and sickly and had a feeble memory. His parents and teachers reproached him and encouraged him, but to no avail. When he heard of the master, Tang and 16 fellow classmates went to ask for his help in strengthening their wisdom and their memories. Stupid Tang especially wished to be a better student. The master said, "Study may be classified into two groups of three ins and three outs. When you study, put your subject, 1, in your mind, 2, in your mouth, and 3, in your eyes. Do not allow any distractions to interfere. Study at all times, 1, on the road, 2, on the pillow, and even 3, on the toilet. In general, be sincere and diligent, and practice your lessons wherever you happen to be. I remember as a student, I always focused my entire mind on my lessons. I saw only the book. If an orchestra was playing next to me, I didn't hear it. If bright colors flashed before my eyes, I was unaware. If one can devote his entire attention to his goal, he can succeed in anything. How much the more so in study?" The students bowed reverently and left. After that, Tong's wisdom suddenly opened so greatly that he far surpassed his schoolmates. His parents and teachers were impressed, and students flocked from all directions to receive the master's instructions.